Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Peter Heller's new novel, The Guide, takes place against the backdrop of Peter's home state of Colorado. It follows a young man, Jack, who accepts a job as a fishing guide at an elite resort in the wilds of Colorado. What begins as an idyllic experience soon takes a dark turn when Jack uncovers a sinister operation lurking behind the resort's picture-perfect facade. Peter Heller is the best-selling author of The River, The Painter, and The Dog Stars. He is also the author of four nonfiction books, including Kook, What Surfing Taught Me About Love, Life, and Catching the Perfect Wave. Again, the new novel is The Guide. It's a great pleasure to welcome Peter Heller to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me.
What brought you to this story, putting a character in these circumstances?
Well, I didn't mean to. I came up as a poet, and I always start my novels with a first line whose sound I like. That's how I do it. And I have no clue what the book's about when I start. So the guide started with the first line, something about, you know, they gave him a bunk in a cabin by the river, spruce and pine, rim rock up high. Jack drops his pack on the porch. And I was excited because I'm a sucker for a good front porch, especially if it's looking over a river. And then, you know, it was Jack, and Jack was the protagonist of the last book, The River. And I left him in, you know, pretty rough shape. So I was really glad to see him, and because I'd been kind of worried about him. And then apparently he'd gotten this job as a fly fishing guide. This is 3 years after the tragedy of the river. And I thought, oh, that'll be good. That'll be good for him. Good. Well, little did I know what was about to happen.
Did you know as you were writing The River that there was more to this story, or did that come to you because of that line that you just told us about?
Yeah, no, I never know. I mean, I just sort of follow, you know, line to line. I spent a lot of my life running rivers in kayaks and stuff. And what I love about that is that, you know, you're running a river you've never done or nobody's done, and you come around a tight bend in a gorge or whatever, and you never know what's going to be there. It could be a waterfall or a mountain lion drinking or, you know, whatever. Five guys with bows and arrows who don't want to see you there. But I love that thrill. And so, you know, that's how I wanted the writing to be. I figured if I was going to plot and just make detailed outlines, I could have just been a lawyer. So
what is also fascinating about your story, I mean, you grew up on the East Coast and then are now so associated with the Midwest and the Denver and in Colorado and that area and of the area of this book too takes on. And that's fascinating, but it's nature in both. And obviously when you were at Dartmouth and you were working the wilds of the Green Mountains and into New Hampshire, I mean, that those areas are very different. And yet the nature, what you write about, there's a great similarity.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Brooklyn Heights, you know, and I spent, when I was a tiny little kid, I was the guy in the bushes around the playground, not on the seesaw, you know, playing cowboys and Indians and stuff. And I don't know. I'm not probably not allowed to say that anymore, but that's what we played. And I just loved being in the woods from a little guy, and it didn't matter where it was, if it was in the Adirondacks, the White Mountains. And you know, when I came out to Colorado, I came out to run rivers, and I'd learned to paddle in New Hampshire, where the runoff and the good water is in early April when there's, you know, ice in the water and snow on the ground. And I got out to Colorado, and we were running this big, you know, big white water, and it was 90 degrees. Your stuff would dry in 5 minutes. There were elk, you know, along the rivers and snow-capped peaks, and it was just sort of a no-brainer. I was like, you know, I want to come back here. And so right after college, I made a beeline for the Rocky Mountains, and I've never left.
What is it, do you think, that is, for yourself and for this character, Jack, that is, especially in Jack's case, as you told us, he was in pretty rough shape at the end of the last novel. So what is it, the restorative power or the hopeful restorative power of nature that he is seeking by taking this job at this resort.
Yeah. I mean, so Jack is a lot like me. I mean, I relate to him. I mean, he's like 10 times tougher and he's a much better fisherman, but I sort of relate to his wariness about people and the way he engages with fishing, with nature, with reading. And so here it is, you know, a few years after this tragedy. And one thing he'd done his whole life, you know, when he was feeling lost or brokenhearted, he read books and he fished. He grew up on a ranch, you know, in Western Colorado, and he's tough, you know, sleeping out under the stars and making breakfast on an open fire, like second nature to this kid. He spent half his life in the saddle. And, you know, that's where he feels at home and most connected. And so, you know, he kind of takes this job because he thinks, you know, he can connect to something that he really just loves, fishing. If he can just fish all day, every day, he's a really good guide. He doesn't mind guiding people. You know, maybe he can feel whole again. And the opening scene, you know, he goes to sort of scout this mile and a half stretch of private fishing water, and it's some of the best in the world. You know, it's a little river, mountain, stream, full of trout. And he catches a fish, a big brown trout. It has a hell of a fight. You know, it's just a real fight. And he brings it in and he unhooks it and he holds it in his hands and lets it breathe and catch its breath and get its strength back. And he cups it loosely in his hands and he lets it go. And he feels the first time, you know, joy, you know, for the first time in like 3 years. And he looks up and there's a camera lens on the little fisherman's bridge over his head. And he feels so violated, you know, that he almost gives it the finger. And but then he thinks, you know, that's probably not the best attitude for the first day on the job.
The idea of, you know, there are the cameras and being watched, and obviously there's more going on. And he has his suspicions very early in the novel, these question marks of things that just don't seem right. So we know pretty much from the beginning that things aren't right. I'm curious, and this is where we get into a little bit of a gray area, because I don't want to give too much away, but you do incorporate the pandemic into this novel, and it plays a role. And I, knowing what you just said, so you start and see where you end up, did you always think that was going to be your writing during the pandemic and that it becomes a part of what you're writing about?
No, I didn't. I started the novel smack in the middle of the pandemic when there was like one COVID. And this book, you know, it's okay. You know, this isn't a big spoiler because you get this again in the first few pages, but you know, this is a near future in which variants are kind of sweeping the country and the people that can afford it are, you know, sort of isolating themselves in remote spots where beautiful places they can do what they love to do, stay out of the dangerous cities and stuff. And that's that sort of raises the hair on the back of my neck because I didn't know about the variants when I wrote the book. And what I did was, so I had, you know, Jack on this porch getting this job as a guide. And then I thought about something an author told me a few years ago. Every one of my novels seems to have a different method, and I like to try different ways in. And I was at a book festival outside of Palm Springs, and at book festivals, I like to get up early, get a cup of coffee, and work for a couple hours before the mayhem starts. And the only other person who was up at that hour at the little breakfast joint was Lee Child, and we sat and talked over breakfast about method. And I said, yeah, man, I just start with the first line, you know, and I just let it rip. I have no clue. And he said, I do too. And I was like, really? You got to be kidding. You know, Jack Reacher novels, they're so fast paced and tightly plotted, you know. He said, yeah, man, I in the first half, I throw everything against the wall I can think of, you know, dead bodies, lurking, menacing figures, you know, car accidents, whatever I can think of. That's fun, and I have no idea. And then in the second half, I mirror all that, tie up all the loose threads, and whatever doesn't tie up is a red herring, and I'm good. And I laughed at, you know, out loud. I was like, you got to be kidding. I mean, I've read whole books on how to write novels, you know, by Stephen King, by John Gardner. You just gave me a method in like two lines. You know, good on you. That was awesome. So so there I was starting this thing in the middle of the pandemic, and I just threw everything against the wall that I could. I thought, that sounds really fun. And I had no clue, you know, the camera under the bridge, you know, there's a post at the top of the run. You get this in the first few pages that says, you know, don't go one step past this post, you'll get shot. There's mauling dogs at the, you know, downstream end of the mile fishing, you know, right, a mile and a half. I threw it all. I had no clue. And then COVID, you know, reared its head and it appeared. And I thought, okay, well, that's sort of interesting. That'll be maybe fun.
Peter Heller is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the new novel is The Guide. It is published by Knopf. Very early in the novel, there's a point where I fall in love with the book for maybe one sentence or one passage. It didn't take me long into your novel. You write, Jack splashed his face in the sink and stepped onto the porch in his boxers. Cold night, nearly frost. And this is the line. The gap in the woods over the river was rashed with stars, and he thought they were like the goosebumps spreading over his limbs. No way to shake it, the grief, or numb it either. Standing nearly naked above the rush of this August creek, it's mine, he might have murdered, mine to carry. That's a beautiful idea.
Thank you. Wow, it's fun to listen to someone else read it. Yeah, my dad used to read to me every night when I was a kid, and you know, no one ever reads to me anymore. you can keep going.
Call me up. Let me know. I'll read. Read away, Peter. It's a beautiful idea, though.
Yeah, I don't know. It's fun. I mean, I love writing about nature because that's where I'm like Jack. You know, that's where I feel most at home. People are complicated. I'm always getting crosswise with people, but with a creek or a night full of stars, you know, it's pretty good.
When you look at this book, and we're talking about a resort for the ultra rich who come, and they're there just to take time away and to be fully immersed. That's how Jack gets this job. But again, all of these questions start to arise. But then Jack meets the person who he's going to guide. And this is just the perfect partnership because these two people are even almost immediately, but eventually become very closely aligned with each other, don't they?
Yeah, his first client. So he meets the manager. He's kind of he's a tough older dude. Old rancher, no BS. And he tells him his first client the next morning is going to be Allison Kay. And Jack's like, okay, well, what's with these initials? And the manager says, well, you know, the rich and famous, they use a lot of initials. You'll get used to it. So Jack doesn't really know what to expect, but, you know, he meets her that evening at dinner briefly. And then the next morning when they're about to head out to fish and they're having coffee, and immediately they sort of like, you know, Jack is pretty reserved. He's got that kind of ranch kids reserve and tact, but immediately he understands that she has a very wry sense of humor, and so does he. And she picks up on it, and turns out she's a really famous country singer, but you know, he doesn't really realize that until like the second day. But they really get along. They're both really down to earth. They're both sort of truth seekers. You know, she's not like your typical, you know, hothouse celebrity at all. She grew up in the mountains of North Carolina. She knows how to hunt and fish. And it's wonderful. I had so much fun writing those two together.
It's fascinating because, as you say, she's not the typical celebrity. She seems to eschew that part of the job, that the singing is great, but the celebrity part she could do without, which is why she's there to be away in nature where she can be protected by it.
You know, there was a one little scene where she's humming, and I don't think she's realizing she's sort of singing to herself, you know, softly while she's fishing. And that's when Jack realizes right. who she is, you know, because she's just singing to herself, and he hears the voice. He's like, oh, wow, that's her. Never stop singing.
What I liked about the relationship, too, is that not everything has to be spoken. I mean, that is sort of a thought of someone who's in nature, that a lot of it is intuitive. It doesn't have to be said. It's intuited.
Yeah. I mean, I think at one point she's fishing this creek nearby, this special, special creek in the valley nearby. And I think she's fishing, throwing a dry fly across the creek, and she says, you know, this kind of fishing, this dry fly fishing feels really pure. She turns over her shoulder to Jack, who's like 4 feet away. And he says, "All fishing's pure." And she says something like, "Yeah, and so we don't need to talk about it, right?" And he goes, "What I was thinking."
Right. Yeah. Now, am I right too? You were talking a moment ago about, you know, writing this right smack in the middle of COVID, but you yourself came down with COVID. Were you writing this as that happened to you?
Yep, I was writing it right then. Yeah, it was terrible. I mean, I was laid out for 2 weeks. I never went to the hospital, but I did feel like if it got any weaker, I would just blow away. It was rugged. And luckily, I got out of it without any long-term effects, thank goodness. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, all my books, I wrote this one sort of in a white heat. I wrote it pretty fast.
Yeah.
But I always get interrupted somehow right in the middle. And I don't know if that's sort of the universe saying, okay, take a moment and think about it, which I never really think too much about it. But I do take these breaks, and even if they're enforced, and I think they might help because I think you do a lot of work when you're in your unconscious.
And it's interesting because I've heard you say this, that you see this as an extension of COVID being an extension of the environmental calamities that you have written about, and as Elizabeth Colbert has written about, that we're in the middle of this sixth mass extinction.
Yeah, and it's the story of our time. I mean, for sure, Joe. I mean, what could be a bigger story? It's existential. And I think what gets me about the fact that we are in the middle of the sixth great mass extinction is that we caused this one. This isn't some meteor striking and wiping off, 99% of the biosphere. This is an extinction caused by us. And I think it's more than a crime. I think it's a sin. And I think that's sort of what I was addressing in this book. I mean, in this book, at this lodge, people are subverting the natural order. And at one point, Jack remembers that he was at college, and one of his teachers who dropped in to teach a course was Marilynne Robinson, the
Right.
great novelist. And they become friends. And he's drinking iced tea in her backyard, and he asks her, "What is evil?" And she doesn't hesitate. She says, "Impediment to being." And it's a question, when I was in Iowa, she was my teacher and we became friends. And I was sitting in her backyard and I asked her the same question. And she said, "Impediment to being." And I've been thinking about that ever since. And I think what she meant is that anytime we, subvert the natural order, that is evil. And of course, if there is a natural order, that then suggests, and she's a very religious writer, that suggests that there is a God, and that's something else to think about and chew over. Yeah, I mean, this is evil stuff going on at the lodge. This is COVID, I think, and the environmental destruction that's happening is, more than a crime.
Peter Heller is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the novel is The Guide. In writing about Marilynne Robinson in the novel, you say she must have been 80 but still vigorous, and she had the light in her eye of someone who has been looking for the truest things every minute of her life. I assume you aspire to that. I mean, I think you achieve it, but you aspire to that of looking for those true things that in fiction, while it could be seen maybe as frivolous when we're talking about the end of the planet and the catastrophe that awaits us, that this also allows us a moment to think and to influence people toward a better life and some solutions to these issues.
Yeah, it's a really good. I mean, it's something I struggle with. I mean, right now with this big tsunami that's coming at us of climate change and habitat loss and all, it's hard to be an artist right now. I think it's a very hard time to be a novelist because sometimes you do feel like you're playing the violin on the deck of the Titanic. But I think that, truth is beauty, beauty truth, as Keats said, and I think that's the best we can do. If we are searching and find true things, we can't help but make a better world. That is the beginning, and that's all we can do. So, I just go along because it's what I know how to do. I know how to write, and I know how to drink coffee and take ibuprofen, and we do the best we can. But I think that is the artist's role, is to steer us towards true things, and that is the only way to have a better world.
with the embrace of nature, and specifically your embrace of nature, not only as an artist, but as just as a human living in it and around it, does that bring some spirituality to it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, you know, going out on the creek, you know, so I'm not a great fisherman at all, but there's a little mountain creek near, you know, this cabin that I have out in southwestern Colorado, out in the mountains, and I fished it every season, you know, every time of day and night. I've often fished it, you know, late into the fall, into night when I can't even see my fly and my legs are numb, you know, if I'm not wearing waders. And I'm all alone in this wooded canyon, you know, spruce fir, wooded canyon, with, you know, you can see the mountains upstream and see the changing aspen on the shoulders of the ridges. And oftentimes, you know, I have been so focused casting, and you know, this is a creek that you can wade up. I've looked up and seen a deer just standing in the middle of the creek looking at me, or seen an elk crossing or a bear, and the road drops away, or the creek drops away from the road, so you're all by yourself. And I fished that thing, you know, when I was brokenhearted, when I was jubilant, when I published my first book, when I felt lost. And you know, it's sort of this touchstone, and it's as close for me, you know, as I get to church. And so there you go. And, you know, another thing a great teacher told me once, when I was at the Iowa Writers' Workshop, I took poetry and fiction, and I took a poetry seminar from Jory Graham, who's a great poet. And we were talking about how you come to the poem. And she said, you know, I think every poem begins with a question, and the poem itself is the answer. And she said, don't ask the question of, you know, your teacher, me, or the critics, or your editor, or your audience, or the market. Ask it of God. And that was something else that I've thought about for years and that really struck me. It's like, you know, why not aim high, and whatever God is to you? Well, you know, God for me is what I experienced out on that creek.
Does it involve prayer?
I do. You know, every time I start a new book, you know, this is a very personal thing to say, but I actually get on my knees and I pray that I can write something true and something beautiful.
And do you feel that you accomplish that? In the sense, I mean, all of us who, I think, who do pray, we look for guidance and help to achieve what we want to achieve. And then, you know, we hope we come pretty close to it.
Yeah, I mean, you laugh a little, and you know, Flannery O'Connor said that every writer is trying to grasp this sea creature that's swimming off into the murk and can never quite grasp it. I always feel like that. But
yeah.
But there's moments where, you know, there's this feeling of getting very close. And to me, when I'm writing, I get so immersed, I get so transported, and I get so in the flow that it's sort of like when I'm fishing, the same thing. You know, when I'm fishing out on that creek, the best part of it is that I have so much attention on just, you know, the water, the wind, the light, everything, that I lose myself and I forget my name. And I become one element in that evening with the nuthatch, the bear, the spruce, the water. And it's such a relief, you know, just to lose yourself and not be at the top of the food chain and not have this big mind that's going all the time. And I, you know, when I get it, when I'm writing and I'm in the flow, I feel the same thing, and I just sort of get lost. There's something humbling and wonderful, and it's, you know, the most thrilling thing that I ever do. So, you know, whether I ever achieve what I really want to achieve, it doesn't really matter. I'm just so thrilled while I'm doing it.
Do you think you'll find yourself writing about Jack or and Allison again?
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I never know who's going to show up, and whoever shows up when I sit down at the coffee shop table or wherever, that's who I listen to and where I go. I would love it if they did, especially Jack.
And that is fascinating to me. I mean, obviously you could make that happen if you wanted to, but then that wouldn't work for you. It has to come more organically than that.
Yeah, it's that question thing that Jory Graham was talking about. It's like, what's the question that, you know, in our heart, you know, in my heart that I really want to answer? And using the method that I use, where I just start with the first line and kind of let it rip, I always end up bumping within a few pages. I bump into what I'm really concerned about, what I care about, what's on my heart, and that's really cool, you know, to have that trust and just believe that the language will take you there. You know, for me to write something, I have to be. It's funny. I was thinking about this the other day, Joe. I was like, I sort of have to be in love with the language at the beginning to get lost enough to let the whole thing happen. And so that's how it starts. And so there's never an idea, you know, there's never a theme, there's never an agenda, there's never like, I'm going to write a series about Jack. It's like whatever shows up when I'm listening.
Well, that section that I read earlier was when I came and said, "Damn, you know, I got lost in your language." So do you have that moment where you think to yourself, "Oh, okay, yeah, I'm lost in this. This is good. I can look back
Absolutely.
and experience it."
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I started writing The Dog Stars, that was my first novel, right? So I didn't know what was legal, you know, writing fiction. And I started with this first line. It was something like, I keep the beast running, I keep the low lead on tap. I had no idea, but low lead is aviation fuel, so I knew there was a plane around. I foresee attacks. You know, a few lines later, my name is Hig, one name, Big Hig, if you need another. If I ever woke up crying in the middle of a dream, and I'm not saying I did, it's because the trout are gone, every one. And when I heard that, I thought, okay, you know, I'm listening, you know, speak. And then it was as if this guy was on the other side of a campfire on an October night with the wind blowing the flames around, telling me what had happened to him a few years before. And it was so thrilling and so compelling that a page or two into it, I realized that it was a post-apocalyptic novel. This guy was in a world where 99.7% of people had been wiped out by his pandemic. He'd lost everything, his wife, his unborn child, but he had his old dog Jasper. I thought to myself, I don't want to write a post-apocalyptic novel, you know, it's like crap. But the voice was so compelling, and the language was so, I was already enamored of the language that, you know, I just kept going, and you know, I'm so glad I did.
The name of the new novel is The Guide. It is published by Knopf. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.